Scale 59, man, pushing 60 over here, and so we're coming off the final Raw, and I think the last few shows, well, we had our recap, we had our awards and whatnot. We haven't really been like going play by play on what's been happening, but I think this Raw like kind of warrants a little bit of discussion because it seemed like a lot of stuff happened.
Well, I think even before that, I think we need to kind of give credit where credit's due. And kind of the main question I want to ask you, which, and you are Better Have My Donuts, and I am Bad News Ramen. But the one I want to ask you is I think the best match by far over the past, I'll probably say probably the past month, if I can be so bold, was John Cena versus Seth Rollins. And I thought that was a really good match, like a very entertaining match, and just kind of a match, one of those matches where you're seeing all this stuff, and Seth is, you know, dusts off the Aside DDT, and everything like that, stuff that was made famous
The Seth Walker.
Is it the Seth Walker? Well, I don't care what it is. It's an homage to the Ultimo Dragon.
Yes, sir.
And then he has a match with CM Punk, and rightfully so. But the question I want to ask you is, what do you think was the better match? Cena versus Seth Rollins or CM Punk versus Seth Rollins?
Well, I mean, I like Punk versus Rollins. I mean, CM Punk match was good. But I think, like, it kind of... The thing I didn't like is... You had these three really good matches that could have been, and they kind of shortchanged the two earlier matches just so they could, like, emphasize Cena versus Rollins, which I don't really like. I mean, like, the Reigns versus, he went Mark Henry, right? He pretty much squash-matched Mark Henry, which is, like, you know, I would like to see 15 minutes of that match if I could, and they pretty much squash-matched Dean Ambrose against Langston. Which, I mean, that can be a great match as well. So, I like that they just kind of dedicated the time to one match between CM Punk and someone from The Shield, which happened to be Rollins.
So, now I'm going to disagree with you on that, though. I mean, not with what you're saying, but I think that they also shortchanged Punk and Rollins as well because they really had the whole dynamic of Reigns and Ambrose interfering on the outside and messing over Rollins. That's probably like a good – I probably say like half the match, you know, had that element in there. And it didn't have, like, at least with Rollins and Cena. And I'm giving a lot of credit to Cena. I gave him a little bit for our Moody's, which you can still check out. Just go to our podcast, which is moodyscale.podbean.com, and you can check out the Moody's. But I'm going to give Cena credit here. I mean, over the past month, and the thing is I've been saying with Cena is that, you know, he needs to win some or he needs to lose some. And even if he wins, he needs to put people over. And I totally thought that my whole basis of what makes a good wrestler is that not only do they get to look good in the ring, but they make the guy that they're fighting or the guy that they beat, they put that guy over and make him look like $1 million. And Cena, over the past, I haven't seen the Randy Orton match where he lost the title, But he put over Rollins to me. I mean, yeah, he still won, but it was really Rollins' match. And the guy that really came out and had a lot of buzz coming off after that wasn't Cena. It was going to be Rollins. And I really liked that match. I thought it was really good. It was one of those things. It was funny because I fell asleep watching SmackDown. And I got up to the beginning part of the Cena match versus Rollins. And it was kind of stale. You know, I was like, okay. And I passed out. And I woke up probably about 1:30. I was like, well, I want to see this match. I try to do it again. And I passed out again. It's kind of like in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where the guy builds that castle like 7 times and it keeps on falling in the river. Well, like, and then I woke up the third time.
Not the full yeah. time.
I caught fire. I rolled over into the swamp, and it sunk again. But I saw it the next morning, and I was really impressed with that match. I was glad that I was able to watch that match because it was a very, very good match. I liked it better than the CM Punk match, and I think the only thing that stopped the CM Punk match was because it was more of a case where the Shield really interfered, and that was a storyline. And you know, they really kind of harped on the whole kind of disharmonious aspect of the Shield for that match, and I think that kind of took away from the match a little bit.
I think that's actually what made it better. I thought Punk did a great job of the beginning of the show in creating the dissension between the three, and the way he drew someone into saying, yeah, where he said, you know, I want the best, and yeah. Like, it was good how he pissed off Ambrose,
yeah.
But how he drew Rollins into saying, well, you know, I'll do it, I'm the best, and then that really caused that good tension between him and Reigns. And, like, you know, I think that comes down to a lot of psychology, right? Like, on the mic, CM Punk is the best at, you know, it's not overt, it's not obvious what he's doing, but, like, he got it in exactly when he needed to try to start driving the wedge between the Shield and see what direction it's going to go in.
Then, so that's before the match, though.
But the whole thing is, and I didn't, because I honestly, I disagree. I don't think there was a whole lot of interference. I thought there was a lot of opportunities where interference could have happened. I thought that, like, that first time when Punk hit the floor, and then Ambrose came over and he did the CM Punk thing where he went cross-leg and sat down and started talking junk to him, and Reigns is in there talking junk. And there was no interference there, but I thought that, I really liked that. And then there was only one time, I think, in the match where they actually tried to interfere. And, you know, it didn't necessarily work. But I also liked the setup for the way that Rollins got into the go-to-sleep. Like, I thought that was a pretty good way to get into that. So I liked everything. I thought the match was really good. Like, there was a lot of false finishes both directions. I thought they had a really good chemistry. So I preferred that match, but the SmackDown match was good. Like, the series, like that was the thing that was really nice about SmackDown, and really a change of pace, I thought, was like, and even Raw for that matter, was they didn't bog you down with a ton of six-man matches and throwing together tag team matches. Both of these last two shows was just a bunch of singles matches, but the thing that ended up being nice, and especially on Raw, was like, there was no Cena, there was no Orton. So all they did was they just had all their workers get out there and they all just worked really good matches. You know, the one thing that wasn't a match was, like, you know, Lesnar and Henry, but that was still, you know, it was short enough and it got the job done in terms of, like, making a build and establishing Lesnar again. So I thought both shows were really good.
All right. So you want to do kind of the whole, I have my kids in the background, so it's kind of tough to do a Muda scale with New Year's Eve coming up. We can't do it at 10 like we usually do. We're doing it during the day. And I got to give a shout out to this guy. He's been driving me around all day today because I had to do some stuff with my car. And I had a quote-unquote air quotes that the producer is going to put in, right? I was working today and stuff, and he still was able to kind of come through and help me out. So it's up to you. If you want to do a play-by-play, which I'm not really a fan of, let's go ahead and do that.
Yeah, well, it's just, I mean, I wanted to talk about, like, this whole Shield and CM Punk build-up. I think the build-up there is really good. So, I mean, if there's anything more, I mean, we talked about that a little bit now, so if there's anything more to say,
Well, you know, the thing that I was thinking, kind of listening to the whole thing, the whole build-up, and, it was actually, yeah, I mean, I think his promo was good, and he starts talking about the Shield comes out, and the conspiracy theorist in me goes, like, you know, maybe to me, I think CM Punk is going to turn and kind of, like, either spearhead the Shield or whatever it is, because just the way he's manipulating them and stuff, that's, like, the first thing that came in my head is, like, we could see, like, another, like, kind of spawn or of the Nexus where CM Punk is the main guy that of that faction, and then they start running more roughshod over wherever, whatever they're trying to do, like maybe go against the authority. Because all these guys, you know, because the whole thing is that with the Shield, people love to hate them, but people love to love them at the same time. And I think they can really take off as a face team. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen, but, and here's the thing that really kind of stops me with in terms of what they're doing, because they kind of have this dynamic where it's Ambrose versus Rollins and Reigns. You know, like Rollins and Reigns have like a really good rapport with each other, and Ambrose is kind of the guy that's kind of going all crazy, and then CM Punk just like shuts down Ambrose real fast, mm-hmm. and which is kind of funny to me. And then, you know, Reigns had that huge kind of singles push after, you know, when he took on all five guys or eliminated four or five guys in Survivor Series. And then, but then you have two matches with Rollins, which you really see what this guy can do. And all of a sudden, it's like now you have like three guys that you know are really, really good in the ring. And either one of them can take off in this like kind of singles role. But I still think they're together as a unit, they're really good. And kind of the dreamer in me is begging for CM Punk to kind of spearhead that group, and they go against the authority and kind of go from there.
Yeah, I mean, and I think I kind of see a little bit of what you were seeing with CM Punk, and I'm wondering, you know, there's obviously like some kind of history between Punk, Ambrose, and Rollins because they've been on the independent scene so much, and I was thinking, yeah, maybe there's a direction where they're kind of phasing out Rollins, I mean, sorry, Reigns, or kind of he's juxtaposing the other two against Reigns so he can bring in Rollins and Ambrose, and I think that would work really good because like they're going to have great chemistry together too, and you could do like, I don't want them to do too many double turns, but I mean, because then, you know, once it happens too much, then it kind of loses effect, but that could be a way you get Reigns to be this monster face going, and then you get Punk aligned with those two, and I think that would work well. The other thing, and you know, wait, how you're saying how like people like they either hate the Shield or they love to hate them. I don't know if you caught this, but real quick, when Punk was trying to get out Roman Reigns, and it's like, you know, I keep hearing you're the best, right? Did you catch that they had a Roman Reigns chant going for?
I didn't catch it. No.
It was about a quick maybe 20, 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think I did.
There was a Roman Reigns chant, and I thought that kind of spoke volumes too. Yeah, the thing that you're saying. It's true about how all these guys, you know, have this great ability and they can all take off. But the thing is, like, I really like this faction because it keeps everybody viable. The one thing that I'd be concerned with is, like, there's a bad history for small wrestlers as singles guys. And basically the way they're setting up Seth Rollins is, like, the guy puts on a great match. I think he's the best worker of the three. But he never wins anything. And I think if he were to go solo, I think he would just kind of get buried down the line in the same likes of Dolph Ziggler and Daniel Bryan and stuff. So I'd be a little bit concerned with that. And that's the main reason why I like having the Shield together. I mean, I think they work perfectly as a team.
Yeah. I don't want to see them. I mean, I think everybody knows that. I don't think anybody that is a fan of the Shield wants them to see them break up. But we also know that like, it's about time that they start doing it because, yeah, they did have a good year run. And with the way the WWE is right now, either you can like it or you can hate it, and that's what makes it so great is that they don't do things for a long time. They don't slow play stuff for a long time. It's like what you can do now, what you can do then. And I think they're starting to realize is that they can have. I mean, the way that their thing is like, well, we can have a really good heel match with Ambrose. Reigns has crazy. He has crazy fan support and everything. And you know, then you have. Seth Rollins, who, you know, look at the match that he can do. He can be a great kind of mid-card worker and everything like that. So, you know, that's why I'm kind of a little bit leery with that whole thing. I agree. But, I mean, what are you going to do? It is the WWE universe, so, you know, they'll do what they do. I'm just the dreamer of me is hoping that, you know, to recap, I'm hoping CM Punk takes them and they can start doing something on top of that. So,
even if maybe they CM Punk took him and turned him into a face team, and then you put them up against the Wyatt family.
Do you think that this and you are getting the Wyatt family? We're going to get into the Wyatt family definitely. But
no, I was trying to segue.
That was a very good segue. But then, but your segue made me question something. Do you think that do you think the Shield's ready right now to be on their own, like as three individuals, or?
I don't know that Seth is ready. I think that Ambrose could have gone solo at any point. I mean, he probably could have started off as a solo guy and been all right. I think Roman Reigns is, like, I think he's ready. I'm worried, you know, I don't want them to give him the push too soon, like a la Ryback, and have him completely fail, but he's way more talented than Ryback. And it's weird with Rollins, because, I mean, it's weird with Reigns, because he's okay when they do promos, but he's really good at talking around the ring. I've never seen him just be able to do, like, one promo on his own, right? You know, the promos are generally dominated by Ambrose. So I would like to see, you know, Reigns get an opportunity to speak with the mic in his hand for an extended period of time and see how good that promo is. But around the ring, like when he's outside or during a match, when he's bad-mouthing his opponent, he's as good as anybody in terms of talking. So I think he's ready, but that would be the one concern. Like in the ring, I don't think there's any question Reigns is ready to go. But can he carry the promos that he would need to if he wants to be a top guy? That would be the one thing that I haven't exactly seen just yet.
So one guy that we know that can carry a good promo and has really surprised us with his promos is one Bray Wyatt. And now, of course, we're going to get into what happened at the end of Raw, which was a total curveball. What I thought that CM Punk was going to start doing with the Shield, well, Bray already did with Daniel Bryan. And so, of course, we're talking about after Daniel Bryan went through the gauntlet with Rowan Harper, and then there was a squash against Bray Wyatt. And then, completely unexpected, he says, "You're right, and I'm waiting for Daniel Bryan to turn and do the babyface thing and turn on him and get the better of him." But then he walks along with him. Mm-hmm. And the reasoning behind it was actually pretty good. I thought this was going to be a bigger slow play, and I was really surprised with what happened. And it's just kind of when everything stopped. The mark of a good Raw is like, okay, I want my girls to see this. I want them to see what happens with Daniel Bryan, because this is something that hasn't happened before. It's something out of left field, and I still saved it. So this is something that, you know, somewhere down the line they're going to watch. So because they're going to start asking, like, well, when did this happen? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was really a slow play. I mean, it was probably like over a course of a month. But him totally like saying he's ready to join that family, I don't get it. You know, I get why his reasoning behind it, you know, kayfabe, but company-wise, I don't get it. I think they could extend this a little bit more. You know, I think they could have had a one-on-one matchup with Bray Wyatt and have like the good old Jim Cornette days and put Rowan and Harper in steel cages and lift them and elevate them above the match and stuff so they can watch or something like that. But
someone get a tennis racket?
Yeah, they get the lowest tennis racket with the peach fuzz and stuff on it and everything. But yeah, I just right for you know you want to talk about best for business. We kind of had like this little segment about is this best for business. I don't know if it is right now. I mean, am I intrigued? Yeah. Is it going to make me watch SmackDown and Raw? It will, but then you have, like, old-school Raw coming up on Monday, you know? So you're going to have a ton of other story elements in there. I just don't think the timing's right. And then you're going to have Batista coming on the 20th. I just don't know if the timing's right for this whole type of thing that they're trying to do.
Well, I mean, what else are they going to do with Daniel Bryan? I mean, like, I think we're on the road to WrestleMania now. You're right. They do have Batista coming in. They got Brock Lesnar back. You know, they're going to try to line up, sadly, I'm hearing they're trying to line up Goldberg, right? So they're trying to line up all their guys that they think are going to draw more money and more eyeballs for WrestleMania. What are you going to do with Daniel Bryan? I mean, this is probably, they're not going to have him in the title picture anymore, right? He's not involved in any way with Randy Orton at this point. I think this is about all that there is.
I mean, they had that slow thing, or they had that one thing where Bryan was saying, like, yeah, if Cena beats Randy Orton, I know that Cena will give me a title shot. So I was thinking, well, maybe that's the direction. But, yeah, you know, the whole thing is that we are getting on the road to WrestleMania, and that's when everything stagnates and starts to become really predictable. I just don't know. I mean, so who do you go against? I mean, do you go against, like, Goldust and Cody Rhodes for the tag team titles, and that's what you have the Bray Wyatt family do, or the Wyatt family do, is to kind of ensure that Rowan and Harper get those tag belts? I just don't know who they go against.
Yeah.
I think that's that might be more credence into it. Might be a case where it's the Shield versus the Wyatt family, and now you have like the straight heels in the Wyatts, and then maybe you start turning the Shield into faces.
Yeah, no, I think that might be the way to go. I mean, they teased that, like, you know, a couple months ago, or right before Survivor Series, right? The idea that you might get a Shield versus Wyatts, and then it never came to fruition. A couple reports were saying, you know, that they might slow play that out to WrestleMania, which, you know, I didn't know if that sounded right? Because, again, they're both heel factions at the time, and you're hearing all this buzz about Roman Reigns is going to become a monster face pretty soon. But, yeah, I mean, I think that would be – that's probably one of the only things that's out there on the table. I mean, I think it makes sense for the Wyatts to go after the tag belts. You know, there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of reports that are saying that, that's probably going to happen at some point. But to me, it's also odd because now you're going to have, what are you going to do with Bray and what are you going to do with Daniel Bryan? So basically you're going to have the two, and you know, I'm not trying to insult them because I think they're good, but the two weakest members of the faction are going to have the gold. And then what are you doing with Wyatt and Daniel Bryan? See, because I could understand Daniel Bryan and Wyatt fighting each other and that leading to one of them getting a title shot down the road somewhere. And especially if Bray Wyatt comes out on top, you know, that could lead to him getting a shot at the U.S. or getting a shot at Langston, right? But, I mean, Daniel Bryan's kind of in this weird position now, I think. I think he's too big to win the U.S. or the Intercontinental belt, and obviously they have no plans of him getting the WWE title. So what are you going to do with this guy?
And that's, I think that's the biggest question. I mean, the whole thing is, and I want to get your take about what you thought about that segment, but before I let you do that, I got to, with my 499 Twitter followers, of course, you know, I have a lot more weight on this show, but not in real life, maybe, I don't know. So anyways, but here's the thing, is like you have a great talker in Bray Wyatt, and then you have your monster pop. I mean, your monster pop every show is Daniel Bryan. You're totally, you're all of a sudden just going to turn that off and give Bray Wyatt the mic and have Daniel Bryan just kind of be like a guy that just stands there. I just don't get it. I don't get why. I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, everything that you ever talk about Daniel Bryan in terms of what the, how the company sees him, like he's not a main event player. You know, he's not a guy that is going to carry main events here and there, even though he has been in every, like, major pay-per-view main event.
I think they said he main evented, like, four pay-per-views in a row.
Yeah, and the whole thing is that he was selling tickets with those pay-per-views, at least in my eyes, in terms of, I don't know what the buy rates were, but everybody in the crowd wants to see him. Everybody in the crowd is behind him. I just don't know what role he's going to be, and I don't know if it's a case where me and you are sitting here and being impatient with it. I just don't get it. Why are you going to take the... He was never a big mic guy anyways, but to take away the thing, the one thing that he did and did very well and just expose the crowd, you take away that pop that he gets, I just don't understand that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe, yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing that we're going to have to wait and see. I mean, I think that it's pretty easy for us to question how it's going to work out now, because it doesn't, like, at face value, I don't think it does make a whole lot of sense. But I do think, you know, I mean, I think it's something we're just going to have to see. But I do think it's going to tell a lot of truth about how they feel about Daniel Bryan. Because, again, like this guy was as hot as anybody for the last 6 months. And then if all of a sudden they're just going to bury this guy down, I mean, I think that kind of that speaks volumes about what they think of him. Because I could have seen how, like, they, when he lost the title to Randy Orton, that they were going to break him down to build him up for a second run. And I could have seen that being something that, you know, could have extended his popularity. But if they're just going to throw him into just, like, the abyss of whatever's out there, then, I mean, I think you may never see him get back to the top again, right? And so it's good. Yeah, it's going to be pretty crazy to see. I mean, there's not much space to maneuver here. I mean, they're clearly dropping him down from, you know, semi-main event status to mid-card status, right? I think that's clearly been done. Now, is he going to be able to recover? I mean, I think that depends. Depending on how good and how important they try to make the Wyatt family storyline going forward with him in it, I think that'll tell you whether they plan to bring him back up or whether he's just going to kind of be middling for the rest of his career.
And even the whole thing with this whole Bray Wyatt thing was that, okay, so yeah, they targeted Daniel Bryan, and they wanted him to join the fold and everything, but then what are they going to do with him after that? I mean, are they going to go after a guy like Brock Lesnar or go after a guy like Batista? You know, it might be a case where they go against bigger guys and try to get them more, all those guys in the main event status, but that's just kind of the whole thing. It's like you either have that route or you have another road to redemption with Daniel Bryan where he joins them for a while and they treat him like garbage or whatever, and whatever he is, and kind of do the whole Red Rooster thing, you know, and say, like, you know, you're not a good enough wrestler, and you're like, oh, well, I'm pretty good, but
you're not as big as Eric Rowan.
Yeah, okay. Yes, you know, something like that, and then he goes gets a title run after that. But is this like the death knell of like Daniel Bryan? I mean, is this like the end of what he's done over the past year?
I think it's a coin toss. Either they have something revolutionary planned for the Wyatts that we just can't see, or it is the death knell of Daniel Bryan.
The other question that I have, or the other parallel that I can look at, is
It's sad when the first parallel you're drawing with Daniel Bryan is the Red Rooster, by the way.
That's not the parallel I'm going to draw. I was trying to do it for the entertainment value. But at the same time, it's like a lot of people can point fingers at the WWE and say, like, well, they don't like small guys and they never push small guys. But they gave Chris Benoit a run. You know, when Benoit was, like, deserving of winning a title, being a world heavyweight champion, they made him a champion. They made him the WWE champion. So there's always there that, too, you know, in terms of, you know, that they're not afraid to put it on a small guy. If anybody's more deserving, I think Daniel Bryan, with what he's done, is more deserving than what Chris Benoit was. I mean, Benoit was a monster in the ring, but I think Daniel Bryan, what he does in the ring and the energy that he does and the pop that he gets from the crowd, I haven't seen a pop like that since people first started liking John Cena. When John Cena was hot and he was like kind of like, he was the guy like, okay, this is going to be our champion for the long haul. And before everybody got tired of him, it's the same type of pop that he gets. And if anybody's more deserving of getting that, of being the small type champion, I think it's Daniel Bryan. And that's what I'm just kind of scratching my head about. And I'm not a fan of the guy. I'm not a fan of Daniel Bryan. So I just don't, you know, that they have a history of pushing small guys. But I just think maybe Daniel Bryan's too nice in the back. You know, I don't think he's prick enough to be a champion.
Well, I mean, what are you gonna do? You're Dolph Ziggler and you speak your mind and you get buried for it. And you're a nice guy in the back like Daniel Bryan, you get buried for it. And basically, they're gonna come up with whatever excuse they can come up with to keep these guys down. Like it seems like it doesn't really matter what they do, right? And that's the thing I would say. It's like, well, you know, just before. Like past history would say, if you come out and you tell creative, hey, you know, you're using me wrong. Like, yeah, they're gonna break you down, but they're gonna respect the fact that you said something, and then you're gonna get your push. But I don't like that. That clearly hasn't worked for Dolph.
And if your name's not Shawn Michaels, you know, that's kind of the ticket there too.
Well, that's actually an interesting name to bring up, because that would be the other name. You know, they've been slowly bringing Michaels around recently, and he does have that history with Daniel Bryan, and that would be one possible future. I could, like, not so much now with the because I don't see how it fits into the Wyatt family, but before that would have been one possible future I could have seen as a match that Daniel Bryan could have been involved in, right? Like a. If Shawn Michaels wanted to do a one-off with Daniel Bryan, I think if he was going to do one with anybody, I think that would be it. So I don't know. I don't know if that's still on the table or not. The other thing, I guess, the one other thing, because you did mention John Cena, it got me thinking a little bit. Maybe if the Wyatts are going to have one guy to attack, right? Maybe it ends up. Maybe that's how you get John Cena out of the Randy Orton title feud, right? Because I'm glad that they're having another match. Like, it's not just like your classic, like, one match and then blow it off and then go on to the next guy, right? So they're extending it out a little bit. But that would be something that would be interesting if they take now the fact that there's something between Daniel Bryan and John Cena and add that to the Wyatts and see if they go after John Cena. Maybe John Cena could bury Husky Harris and his faction a second time.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. Okay, so the other thing I want to ask you, and it's, I don't know if we're being hypocritical with this whole thing, but we always kind of complain with WWE always kind of being the same over and over again. Now they're bringing in Brock Lesnar, which I think is kind of the right time. They're going to bring in Batista, so they're bringing in, like, new guys. You know, you are talking about Goldberg. Is this the time of year to, like, stop, to, like, not watch wrestling? Because, you know, they're going to bring in all these old treads that they're only going to have a couple months run. They'll be talked about, or they'll have promos, no matches, leading up to WrestleMania. I mean, is this the time where we kind of stop watch wrestling, or do you like the change that's going on?
If I'm basing it off of last year, then I would think that this is the time to, like, after Royal Rumble is about the jumping off point. I kind of think it is. Like, it seems that they're more and more focused on, for that WrestleMania season, just bringing in a bunch of retread guys, like, you know, just big name guys, so they can try to sell WrestleMania, I suppose. I mean, they, you know, I'm going to assume their marketing is pretty good, so I'm going to assume they know what they're doing, but that does nothing for me. Right?
I mean, do you like the universe right now, the way it's set up right now? I mean, do you like the way the universe is before they start bringing in all these old guys? I mean, have you been liking wrestling over the past three, 4 months, because I remember last year we really liked the direction that a lot of things were going in, and all of a sudden they just turned the switch and said, okay, we're going to reset everything, and we knew that this was the road to WrestleMania. It was going to be very bad to watch for a long time. We were waiting for WrestleMania to be over so they can start everything up again. The one thing I did like about Monday was that they said that John Cena would have faced Randy Orton. So possibly what that means is that John Cena is not going to be in the Royal Rumble. But you never know. He might be in the Royal Rumble. He might win both. You never know. But the first thought was like, okay, he's not going to be in the Royal Rumble, so there's going to be a new guy that's going to have a ticket for the belt.
Yeah, at first that's what I kind of thought. Maybe Cena's not going to be in it, but I thought about it for a while. I'm sure he's in, because even Randy Orton's saying he's going to win it, and then he's going to defend his title, and then he's going to win the Rumble. So they may both jump in the Rumble, for all I know. There's a lot of good potential to come out of this Royal Rumble. But then afterwards, then you know somehow, like, it's like there's like pieces to a puzzle now, right? It's like, okay, well, Batista's going to have to be a major player at WrestleMania or else they wouldn't have brought him back. Brock Lesnar has to be a major player. Triple H has to force his way in somehow. Undertaker's going to do it again, right? So, like, right there, that's, I think, without even thinking about it, that's like four or five guys.
And yeah, Sheamus is going to come back in the Royal Rumble.
And Sheamus is going to come back too, right? So, right there, that's like five, six guys, just without even really putting any thought into it. And then, again, like, you know, these Goldberg rumblings. Where is there going to be room for any of these other guys that are trying to make a name for themselves and try to come up? So, I do like the universe the way it's been constituted. I don't think they need all of these guys. I think it actually hurts. I think it actually hurts it. But you know, it's again. I think they know how they're going to make their dollars, and they think that they're going to get more buy rates that way. I personally would suggest this kind of a short-sighted view, because what they're doing is they're not allowing themselves to build any more stars. So they're always going to be stuck on trying to bring back somebody from 5, 10, 15 years ago for a one-off at WrestleMania, when you should be trying to build up the guys that you have right now. I mean, there's no reason why. Like, yeah, this is what I was thinking like the other day. It's like you know, when we get that nostalgia pop when they bring somebody back, like Ric Flair, they're saying is going to show up, right? So Ric Flair shows up next week, and we get all crazy. We all excited to see Ric Flair one more time. Think about the stuff that he's done and the legend that he is, right? Well, we're not going to have anybody like that in 20 years from now, right? Like, we're going to have these guys that we liked. And then we're talking to our grandkids, and they're like, well, why'd you like this guy? Well, he worked really good. Okay, but, well, what good storylines was he in? Well, they never let him get in any good storylines, right? There's really going to be, they're going to have to milk John Cena for all he's worth. Okay, and you can imagine how bad those matches are going to be 15 years from now, because, I mean, his work is suspect already. Okay, so now once he's into his 50s and they try to bring him back for these one-off matches, what's he going to do, right? Daniel Bryan, right? What are they going to talk about? Well, he was super hot for about 6 months one time, and that's about all he ever got. You know, he was WWE champion 3 times, and each reign lasted for about 2 days, right? CM Punk's going to be the only guy that they can come back. They're not going to have anybody to draw down the future. I think they're really shooting themselves in the foot at some point. They want to keep relying on Brock Lesnar, Batista, The Rock to come back and try to save them for one payday, when you got Dolph Ziggler right there that you can make a star out of right now. You've got the entire Shield that you could make a star out of right now. Okay, what happened? I mean, this year, yeah, Shield's been around for a year. Maybe they still need some seasoning. But what happens when we come to Mania season next year and they kick all those three guys of the Shield down the card so they can bring back The Rock again, right? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I totally agree with what you're saying. To compare it to Ric Flair, you're never going to have another guy like Ric Flair.
Nah.
You know, and you're not going to have those type of wrestlers anymore. I mean, and even to a small part, you're never going to have a guy like Mankind. You know, you're never going to have a wrestler like that, because you're right, because Mankind was able to get all these storylines because they were relying on these guys.
But the thing is, you say you're never going to have that, and my question is, why not? It's not because they can't do it. It's because they're too short-sighted, and they're only concerned about trying to make as much. They're trying to squeeze as much money out of this WrestleMania as they possibly can, instead of thinking about, well, what's going to happen in, like, why don't we build something for 2 and 3 WrestleManias down the road so that we have, like, a whole roster of 40 guys that we can make a great show out of, right? They don't do anything like that.
Well, the one kind of saving grace Well, first of all, you're never going to have a Ric Flair because you're never going to have that system again where you have...
Yeah, but look, see, look, 15 years from now, okay, you're going to have John Cena and you're going to have CM Punk that you can bring out from anywhere, right? Okay, but aside from that, who are you going to have that's going to matter, right? Like look at Chris Jericho. They can bring Chris Jericho back anytime they want, okay? And Jericho is not the biggest. He was never the number one guy in any promotion, to be honest. Okay, but the guy, but you can still tell about 15 tales about great storylines that Chris Jericho had, right? They're not going to allow, like, you know, I should be able to in 15 years. Let's say John Cena's hurt or whatever, right? And they come into WrestleMania season. You should be able to say, okay, let's get Cody Rhodes in here and have Cody Rhodes come and have Cody Rhodes do a one-off. Okay, he's got a legendary family, great wrestler, great athlete, got everything, got the look and everything. But it's not going to work because there's nothing. Cody Rhodes hasn't been allowed to do anything except for, like, have a couple of so-so tag team runs and intercontinental runs. Okay, and is it because Cody Rhodes doesn't have the ability? No, it's because he's never given a chance. Okay, you got a ton of guys that you could build towards big matches at WrestleMania, and they're never going to get a chance to make a name for themselves because they're just going to keep bringing in guys that I guess some people want to see, but I don't know anybody that does.
But it's funny, you're bringing up all these guys, and, okay, Cena's probably, granted, probably has to be in this class, but you're bringing up all these guys that had a ton of mic time, right? Jericho really started turning the corner when they gave him the mic, and he started having all the stuff against Stephanie and stuff. All these guys you're bringing up have had major mic time. They're major promo guys, and then they could perform in the ring as well, just as good as they did on the mic. You don't have that anymore. You don't have guys that, you know... I don't know if Ziggler can carry it on the mic. I don't know if... I know Bray Wyatt can carry on the mic, but it's his character. You don't have... You look at the guys that they're bringing back now, right? Brock Lesnar, Batista. None of those guys were... I mean, they're not good on the mic now. I mean, the only thing that they are is that they're too... They're, you know, physical attractions, you know, that people, you know, that people want to see because they're all huge and yoked up. And I think there's the boy wrestling fan is always going to gravitate towards those big guys. Like, he used to gravitate towards Ultimate Warrior. Like, I would gravitate towards Don the Rock Morocco. You know, these really built guys. But then after a while, it doesn't translate. So there isn't a case anymore where you give the guy a mic and let him promo. All the promos are so scripted that they really can't make a name for themselves. Like, and one guy that I can kind of point to, or two guys I can point to, is going to be like Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, right? They never were ever, if you look back, they were never really involved in major storylines. You know, they NWO. NWO. I'm sorry, I did a slip of the thought process right there. But while with the NWO, they never had like a great, you can't really name like a great rivalry that any of these guys have in terms of storylines. Like with Flair, you can. With Hogan, you can. Mankind, you can. The Rock, you can. Stone Cold, you can as well, because they've had these great feuds with people here and there. But guys like Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, to me, never really did. These guys were just cool. You know, they were cool because they got on the mic and they could cut great promos. But the body of their work doesn't hold up, I don't think. But their mic work does. And that's kind of the whole problem that I see right now, is that the guys are bringing back. I don't know. Like, Batista had, what, did he have a feud with Orton and John Cena? Two guys I really don't care about. Brock Lesnar was kind of John Cena for a while, and then he quit because he didn't like the way his storyline was going. So you have these guys that don't have the resume, and they have the look, and that's about it. And I don't know if there's ever going to be a time where you're going to give the mic to any of these guys and see if they can run with it. And I think the only guy that they can do that with is CM Punk, and that's why they can do it. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying, and I don't know how to fix it, and that's the problem. The one saving grace that I can say is that every match this Raw was a very good match. Dolph Ziggler, I thought, had a great match. He won. Sandow, even though the Great Khali's shoulder was up, he still won the match. And then, I thought Fandango had a great match with Big E Langston. I mean, I think there's kind of guys in here like Big E. I think Big E's one of these kind of gray areas where I think he can really take off if given the chance. But then you also have the other match too. The best storyline you have right now, which is sad in the WWE, besides the major storylines, is going to be Brodus Clay versus against R-Truth and the other guy. That's the best storyline you have.
Xavier Woods.
Yeah. And I apologize. I'm still sick, so whenever I talk, I'm going to start coughing and stuff and everything. But yeah, it's kind of I agree with what you're saying, and I don't know what's going to happen with that.
That's all I would say. Like you kind of prefaced your statement when you're saying like, I don't know if Dolph Ziggler can carry it on the mic, right? Which is fine, but that's the, to me, like, I mean, it's a reasonable statement for you to make, but to me, that's the problem. The guy's been on WWE programming for about 4 straight years, okay, and that doesn't even include the
ECW stuff.
And well, before when he was on when he was the male cheerleader and stuff like that, right? So it's like, how can you have a guy that's on TV almost every week? He's one of your best workers. He's carried a bunch of titles, and you still don't know. That's where I have a problem.
But we know he can do it. Right. Even when he was like Skippy or whatever it was, yeah. I mean, and they would interview him about stuff. I mean, he was a great flipping interview. You know, just kind of toeing that line of that Spirit Squad thing. I thought he was great on that. Like you look at kind of the documentary DVDs, and he's there talking about it, and he cuts it great on the mic, and I think he can cut it great on the mic now. There's no room, and you're right. You know, you're talking about, you know, Rollins and stuff like that, and Rollins is kind of lost in the shuffle. If that's what you're afraid of. I totally agree. I'm afraid that he's going to go the Dolph Ziggler route, where you have this great flipping worker that nobody ever gives a chance to.
Right. So that's what the problem is to me. Like, I mean, they're so like I would relate it like this. This is going to come out of kind of left field, right? But Lisa, my wife, right? She had this friend that like had a bunch of. She was in a bunch of relationships, right? And, like, ended up not going well for her, right?
Get to the point.
No.
I'm sorry. No, I'm just giving you a bad time.
So, basically, like, she was working in, she was, like, a manager for a lot of, like, pretty well-known, like, rap artists, right? And all the guys that she would meet.
You tried to hook me up with her one time, right? Like,
Possibly.
Yeah.
So she's a really smart girl, really cool girl and everything, right? But every guy she met, like, at some hip-hop club, right? And every time, like, you know, she'd go out, meanwhile, then the guy would, like, do her dirty, and then she couldn't understand. And then she goes to the next one, like, she meets another guy. And it's like every person you meet and every person that you date is of the same mold, and it always ends up the same, right? At some point, you got to look and say, well, you know, let's do something different and see if we can make a star. It's like they have one mold that they're trying to go to, and even then it's like staring them right in the face that, you know, we got someone that isn't quite the textbook mold of what our superstars generally are, but they got a huge buzz, everybody likes them. They'd rather just say, no, let's shut that down and see if I can take some roided out freak like Ryback and make him into a star, because even though it's everyone knows like Dolph Ziggler has all the goods and people like him, I just don't want that to be it. It just doesn't make any sense to me. That kind of thinking, it just seems very short-sighted to me.
Okay. So, okay. So, one thing I do kind of, what I realized watching, especially Rollins, and then watching, you know, those two matches against CM Punk and John Cena, and even watching the Wyatt family, too, those matches, the style that they're doing reminds me a lot of Porresu. The same type of really high athleticism, a lot of punch to what they're doing, a lot of like realism to it. The style of those matches are really good. And then you throw in like CM Punk with the stuff that he can do. It's funny that the matches that I'm starting to like, you know, within this reminds me a lot of the old Japanese wrestling, which I always liked. Mm-hmm. And so it's just there's kind of a shift. Like they talk about the WWE style. Right now the WWE style is you have tag teams, and then you can do these matches with the indie stars, and these are the guys that are bringing the goods, and which is kind of if I have that type of style, if I have kind of matches where Ziggler wins, where Sandow wins, where guys that know how to wrestle and tell different stories in the ring, and then you can even have like a Brutus Clay tease where he's just like dominating and he loses at the end because you know somewhere down the line he's going to win, and then you have like the style of like a Biggie Langston. I will be okay with anything they do at the top level, as long as they have like the wealth of matches leading up before that, then it's good wrestling to watch. So maybe that's the way that I should start looking at what this is going on right now. All the guys that we like aren't going to be major stars, but they're going to kind of like the way the Radicals were in terms of Benoit, Guerrero, Malenko, and Saturn. You know, you had all these guys that carried the main brunt of those matches, and they're being taken care of in terms of pay with the way WWE is doing them. But I think if us as wrestling fans that we have to step back and say, okay, these guys aren't going to be top-level guys, but we should enjoy the matches that we're doing now because the WWE, like you said, has this particular mold of what their main eventers want to be, and that's the way it's going to be, so maybe we should just shut up and just enjoy what we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the main reason why I watch is for the matches. Not like I'm kind of starting to kind of have to, in some cases, I have to start like de-emphasizing the storyline and just accept that the storyline is going to be what it is. So maybe that is the way to go. I mean, I think down this road to WrestleMania, that's exactly what it has to be. Because if you're going to base it anything off of what it was last year, the storylines are about to start sucking ass for the next 6 months. So I will continue to watch because if I get to see three members of the Shield wrestle every night, or you know, get them in a six man tag match or whatever, they're the workhorses that are going to carry the show. But the storylines, if I'm basing it off what I saw last year, it's going to get bad here in about a month.
See, now when we first started talking about this, started doing this podcast, you said the exact same thing, and I totally disagree with you. I said no. I said I want to see stars being created. I want to see the pageantry. I want to see guys that are cool. Like CM Punk is cool. You know, like Daniel Bryan is cool. The Wyatt family just like reeks of like just being cool. And along with the Shield too, it's like they draw me in with their persona, and then they can get it done in the ring. But I'm leaning more towards you now because yeah, the storylines. I'm not going to trust any storyline because you're never going to have a major storyline. We got very, very lucky, and looking back at everything, we got very lucky with CM Punk's storyline when he held the title for 434 days. I mean, that was, like, epic. And while we were doing that, I was telling you, I was like, hey, I'm like, I think we just need to start recognizing that, you know, this is going on, and we should be happy with it because it's not going to come around in a long time. And looking back in the hindsight, I was right with that. But I am leaning more towards what you're saying now is to enjoy the matches. My whole thing, though, is that I don't want to see Dolph Ziggler lose every flipping week. I don't want to see Sandow lose every week. I was happy that Sandow won. I was happy that Ziggler won. I was happy that Sandow said that he would quit because then I thought, oh, great, he's going to win. Thank God. Yeah. You know, now I know he's going to win. And when Dolph wins, I was very happy that he won. When Big E won, I was very happy that he won. But I was very happy with the match that Fandango did. Fandango, they played the whole, like, they didn't do the whole Bros Clay trick knee where they tap it once and all of a sudden Bros is out for the count. I mean, Fandango was working on
he worked on the leg for a bit.
Worked on the leg, and then they told a great story within that. So you do have these guys. And Fandango, he's been coming around to me, you know. I mean, I'm not a big fan of him, but his ring work has been pretty good. Once they start getting away of all the stupidity of his gimmick and let him kind of shine in the ring. I mean, he was going to do the leg drop on Big E Langston. Yeah. And Big E like rolls out of the ring like your WWE 2K14 game. Cheap plug. But it was like, that's great storytelling. I was like, wow, that's a really good match. And I was watching that match and, you know, to tell you the truth, to me that was kind of the match of the night. You know, it wasn't the best match, but in terms of watching it and
it exceeded your expectations more than any other match?
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of, if they can keep on doing that, then I'll be fine with what they're trying to do up on top. But knowing their track record, I don't think you're going to have Dolph Ziggler win every night.
Yeah. No, I mean, definitely he's not. It's hard to say like what I'm fine with, because I can sit here and tell you right now, logically, I'm in it for the matches and whatever the storyline is, then, you know, I'm not going to get mad. But I know I'm going to get – I will watch it and I will start getting mad. And, like, you know, it's kind of silly because I know I shouldn't. But it's hard because, like, that's the thing. You kind of get invested in these characters, right? And like, with, like, anything else, like, you'd like to see those that are the best be rewarded as such. And you're just not going
to
get that.
But I think we've kind of resigned to the fact of what the character is for Dolph Ziggler, and I've resigned to the fact of what the character of what Sandow is. They're not going to get in the main event, because any time that the timing for anything for them to be in the main event was this year, and they didn't, and they both got squashed. Even though they're cutting great promos. I mean, Sandow by far was cutting great promos. I mean, he was a guy that you wanted to see on the mic. And they even got away from that. So it's just kind of, I think we're resigned to the fact of who these guys are.
Here's what I want to see going forward. This would kind of be telling for me, I'd say, going forward for next year. What do they start doing with the Intercontinental belt and the United States belts? Okay, because I think we could say clearly, you know, these guys that we like that really work that are on the big card.
Because they fixed the tag team belts.
Yes, they did fix the tag team belts, and now that they've unified the world and the United States, or the world and the WWE titles, you know, there's only like a select few that are gonna get a chance to go at those belts, right? It's gonna be John. It's gonna be some rotation of John Cena, CM Punk, Randy Orton, and then
Daniel Bryan.
No, and then whatever rotation of old stars that they're gonna try to trot around, like Batista and these guys that they're bringing back for WrestleMania. Okay, but I think that combining those belts, like, and I mentioned this last week, I think it eliminates a lot of confusion on what the hierarchy of these titles are. And I think, because having that world title there, it's like, you know, clearly it's a step up from the Intercontinental, but they don't book it as such, right? So I think now there's a clear level of what belts are available to the mid-card guys, and I think they should go and let these guys have their mid-card runs, and that's all they're going to get.
You have your silver lining with that, with them combining the two belts. But the problem I have with that is they still have the two belts. They've never really said whether it's a unified belt or not. They've teased to it with voting and stuff, but I think somewhere down the line they're going to split those belts up because he's still walking out with those two belts. If he was walking out with one belt, I'd be like, yeah, that's probably the right way to go. But he's still carrying those two belts, so I think somewhere down the line that belt's going to open up again, and then we're going to have the same type of problems that we had before.
It is interesting in that you would think that if they were going to unify these belts permanently, they wouldn't have made a brand new belt like 4 months ago. But at the same time, like if you really, you know, if you follow through these like something like the Dirt Sheet kind of like internet sites, they pretty much regularly state that WWE creative, they're in a state of flux. They don't necessarily know what they're doing going forward for any length of time. So it could make sense. It could be, in fact, true that when they had that new belt made, they still didn't even really know that they were going to unify these titles. So yeah, I would think that this is going to be a permanent thing, that these belts are going to be united. But yeah, it would have made more sense that they didn't introduce this new version of the belt and then they unified the two and then presented that as the belt that unifies everything. But whatever. As long as I don't have to look at that stupid spinner belt, then
we're all
whatever
good.
They do is fine. I'd like them to do something with that damn U.S. belt, man. I think that flag looks super corny.
Yeah. It had its time and it never... It had its time when it was the Great American Bash, you know, and that was kind of... Whatever. All right, so we're getting to that time where we start getting into our segments. So the first one we get into is going to be Hall of Kayfabe. And this is my man's birthday last week, and we're trying to figure out what the Hall of Kayfabe is and how we do this and how we do that. And it was funny, I was trying to put George South in, and it wasn't squashed too much, but you didn't know anything about the guy, so it wasn't point of having him in. And then you listen to the podcast of Chris Jericho, and they bring up George South as...
It was Austin's podcast, and he was interviewing Cornette. And, Cornette started talking about how good of a hand George South was, and specifically saying how, like, Ric Flair used to piss people off in, I think, the Carolina and the Tennessee territories, because he would make George South look so good, even though South was a straight job guy. So I just thought that was funny, because I was listening to it on the way home from recording this podcast. And exactly right there, we were talking about South.
And you said, man, damn it, Bad News Roman was right again. Man.
I didn't say that. But what I did say is that maybe we should open up a new wing into the Hall of Kayfabe. So right now, we've had the Hall of Kayfabe, which was the pro wrestlers. Right?
That's the top floor, right?
These top guys that we needed to give some kind of recognition to. Then we did open up a second wing for contributors. And I believe that the two that are in there are Jesse Ventura as a broadcaster, and Jim Johnson as the music coordinator. And I think we kind of came to the agreement that we should open now a third wing
for jobbers
for job like yeah.
Well, you don't want to go jobber right now though, right? I mean, is there a guy that you know, there was the greatest podcast that was never heard that you put a guy in, and he's not in right now. So maybe we can go that way, or if you have kind of another guy that you're thinking of, or that you can think off the top of your head.
Let's see. I got a guy that I've been wanting to induct for quite some time, but I'm not ready to, just because I need to go back and do a little bit more like research on him so I can talk a little bit better. I mean, he should be in there for sure.
There's one guy I kind of want to bring in because this guy was one of my favorite wrestlers for maybe about a span of a year, and he kind of fell during that time of the whole honky tonk era. And well, no, maybe I'm mixing it up, but there's actually a guy that I liked a lot, and he was a heel for a long time, and then he became a face, and then he just really took off. But he got tired of facing one guy, and he faced this guy for probably a year straight, and he finally left the WWE, and I think he went to Japan for a while. But it's funny that we haven't put this guy in, and I think you're gonna follow me along with this one, and you probably have some stuff to talk about this guy too. But it's going to be the first Rock, and that's Don the Rock Morocco. Definitely, I think, deserves to be in. And on top of that, he's a Hawaiian guy, too. You know, he's from the island, so I'm surprised we haven't put this guy in. But the Rock, for me, Don the Rock Morocco, he was something else. I mean, he was kind of a – you want to talk about the WWE machine. I mean, he was a good heel you know, just a guy that was a heel, nothing really great, but then he teamed up with superstar Billy Graham. He started wearing the tie-dye. He had the blue and white tie-dye going on and stuff because, you know, Graham was known for his tie-dye. And then he had that flipping old-ass song, you know, dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun. So it really worked. And he was probably like one of my, I want to say, I'm going to kind of show you my marketing-ness back then, but along with Bruce the Barber Beefcake, at that time, he was probably my favorite wrestler, those two guys. Because I was a huge fan of Beefcake.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see Beefcake win the Intercontinental title. I didn't know how bad Beefcake was back then. And maybe we put Beefcake in the jobber, in the jobber era, you know. Oh, the guy couldn't cut a promo, dude, you know. So, you know. Cause remember,
but he did.
He would talk real quiet. Yeah. And then he would talk real loud. And then that was the whole basis of all of his promos. And then and the other thing you worried about was that he'd chop off Hulk Hogan's fingers when he teamed with Hogan with those shears that he had. But tell me about what you remember about Don the Rock Morocco and whether you think he's deserving to be in the Hall.
Yeah, he's been on my little makeshift list for a while. Yeah, he deserves to be in here. What I remember about him, the guy was freaking yoked, man. Was just really big. It was, I gotta believe the guy was roiding at some point. I mean, he was in the kind of era where the roids were rampant and whatnot, but this guy was just huge and just vascular as shit. Like, I just remember his biceps having, like, bulging veins coming out, like, places that looked really odd that they should be coming out. But I remember that about him, and I also remember the guy had the jumping pile driver, and that was, like, you always, in the 80s, when they actually let people do pile drivers, when someone did a pile driver, you liked that guy.
Was it inverted or was it
regular? No, it was regular. Okay. It wasn't as good as Orndorff's jumping pile driver. It didn't have the height, but it was still a really good-looking pile driver. The thing that I like, so a couple things with Morocco. Not only was he the Rock, but he had like several different versions of his character, right? There was a Magnificent Morocco. There was Don the Rock Morocco, and there was like Magnificent M when he was doing territory stuff down in the South and in the Carolinas and stuff. I really liked the fact that, yeah, like we're always going to gravitate towards a guy like him or like Snuka because they're from Hawaii or they're from the islands. But this guy was able to go through all the different territories and places where generally like island guys, you know, they're not necessarily going to be favored. And he was always like a pretty big star wherever he went. And he was in that time where, you know, he would have been facing the guys like the San Martinos in Madison Square Garden. But they were big in Hawaii, too. They were huge in Hawaii. And so he's fighting against, like, The Rock's grandfather, like Peter Maivia, tag teaming with Fuji and then having Fuji as his manager. So, like, when you kind of think of, like, he's not, like, anywhere near this top-level superstar, but this is, like, the perfect type of guy that we'd like to bring about in Hall of Kayfabe because he had a bunch of good matches, a bunch of good rivalries, but wasn't really, but never was really like a big time guy. Also, I believe he was the second ever ECW champion, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know.
I believe that's the case. You know, the first one was
Raven, right?
No,
I don't know. Anyway.
Snuka.
Snuka was the first ECW.
And I think him and Morocco, I think they have like this whole like depending on what was the story and what was going on, they were either tag team partners or they were fierce rivals. And I think they kind of went from company to company together, I think, just to either team with or fight against each other. And it worked. I mean, it worked out pretty good. And to my knowledge, Morocco hasn't killed anybody.
He hasn't killed anybody. That's the reason why he should be in. It's funny that we've never put Snuka, because you were huge on Snuka way back when. And that guy definitely roided. Anyways, but what I remember about a couple things with Morocco, it brought out two things, or actually it brought out one thing that, you know, a lot of fun that we have to this day. But I remember, excuse me, being sick sucks. He was in a Survivor Series match where he was just doing move after move after move after move on all these like big time guys, and then he ended up like getting pinned. And I remember sitting there going like, you know, this is why I think he should be in the kayfabe. But I remember sitting there going like, man, I'm like, why are they getting this guy out so early in the flipping match? I'm like, because he's carried this match so far. And then the match kind of died after that. It's like, oh, okay, yeah. But that's when I kind of first started noticing the guy. But, you know, we talk about the little things with this guy. I mean, he had a great entrance. He looked great in that tie-dye. He worked really – I mean, that whole Billy Graham thing worked really well. And it was just kind of a nice kind of throwback with that to see Billy Graham and see him together. The other thing that it spawned was John the Rock Morocco. And whenever we would play wrestle and stuff, you know, it kind of spawned the finger four. And then there's something else I did with the fingers too. It was kind of like I think I gave you like a finger pile driver and stuff. I'd pile drive your finger and stuff and everything. And it first started, the greatness of John the Rock Morocco was first started on this man over here. Bet I had my donuts, and then it went to my sister. You know, my younger sister, I put the finger four on her and stuff, and I'd do the finger chop and everything, and then it went to your kids, and then it goes to my girls a little bit too. So a lot of any time that you can have like 20 years of generations of doing the same character, and John the Rock never gets stale, you know, and he can't rap. John the Rock can't rap, but he can put you in that finger four, and it's game over for that. So yeah, Don the Rock in the Hall of Kayfabe, good for you. And then our last segment that we're going to get into, because we're hitting up on an hour, is there a match that you want to talk about, a match that you remember off the top of your head?
Yeah, I can, because I went back and watched a few on Saturday, so I can do that unless you have any you want to go for.
No, go ahead. I mean, it's all you. I mean, go
so
ahead.
So I found I recently got an iPad. And what I found is, like, you can connect this iPad through, like, your, like, there's a PlayStation 3 has an app for YouTube. And if you have your iPad synced through Wi-Fi, you can control, like, the PlayStation 3 through your iPad, which is pretty cool. And so we're messing with it on Saturday. So we started watching some old promos, showing my son, like, some old stuff.
Especially the old Ultimate Warrior promos, right?
No, that didn't come out because we were talking about Mr. Farmer. That was with over the last couple of days.
Yep.
But on Saturday, like what I wanted to show them was my kids had never, like I had never showed them any of the old Edge and Christian stuff, right? And so I wanted them because my oldest son's really into like guys that are funny and stuff like that, good on the mic and stuff. So I went through and I wanted to show him all the 5 second pose things. So we started off on that, and you know, you kind of get through this like rabbit hole where you're watching YouTube videos. So I came across because I also wanted to show him the match that we discussed last week, which was the Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit versus Austin and Triple H tag team match. Where Triple H tore his quad. So I showed him that match, and then from there, I came across the old TLC matches. And so I was like, well, you know, we should take a look at some of these. So there's a bunch of the TLC matches. The early ones were at WrestleMania and these pay-per-views, but there's one that they kind of call the lost TLC match. And it was actually... So originally, most of the TLCs was Edge and Christian against Hardy. And then the Dudley Boys worked their way into the TLC like series, and then the lost match was on SmackDown, so it was like the first one that was live TV, not a pay-per-view, and that was when Jericho and Benoit were the tag team champions. So it was all four of those teams, and this was an awesome match. So first, like the backstory to it was that Benoit had got a beat down like the week before. So he came out, and really early in the match, he did this high spot where he went off the top rope outside to the floor. He was supposed to, like, someone was on the table, and then they actually rolled off, so he went flat through the table straight onto the ground, and they had to cart him out. Like, his ribs were allegedly messed up. And so from there you get, you know, because you still got, you know, what is that? You still got like seven great performers out there that are, you know, you know, that's how good the match is. You could take Benoit out and still have a great match. And so all these guys were doing all their high spots. Hardy went 20-foot ladder with a leg drop onto Bubba Dudley through the announce table. Edge keeps on getting to the top of the ladder, and then they push it over, and he crotches himself on the top rope a bunch of times. But just like the creativity that these guys had, their willingness to put their bodies on the line, and then it's kind of as you know, as much as I like going back and watching these matches, like I feel a little bit of guilt and a little bit of sadness. Like I'm telling Xavier, because you know my oldest son, I'm telling him because you know we're getting to see Christian in his prime, and you know he's a pretty big fan of Christian, and I'm kind of telling him, hey, you know, this is the reason why Christian, like, he comes back for like 2 weeks and then he gets hurt and he's out for 6 months and comes back is because he put himself through this stuff. Edge, the reason why Edge had to retire at such a young age, is because of all these. A lot of it has to do with all these TLC matches. So I mean, going back and watching, I mean, they're just great matches. It's you know, definitely it's a lot of high spots and stuff, but the storytelling is still really good, and there's just so many really talented guys in that ring. You know, it's funny going back and seeing like a young Bubba Dudley and like a slim Devon if they're a 3D gimmick with their stupid glasses and all that. Christian coming out with these giant like bug eye goggle glasses and stuff like that. It's just long hair. It's just fun to watch, but the matches are great. Have you seen any of these?
I apologize, man. That was I was waiting for you to say something else. I think I remember that Benoit spot where he did that. But I never really watched any of those matches because they've always been on pay per view and I wasn't buying pay per views at that time. But I mean, they pretty much. I mean, it's kind of like it's wrestling lore now. You know, it's like if you want like to have and. WWE's been trying to recreate that, and I think the closest they ever got to it was when that one dude he dyed his hair blonde and stuff, and he ran up the steps and did all this.
Oh, Shelton Benjamin.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of, that was like the last time they tried to kind of recreate that, and they had that type of buzz, but these guys, like, pretty much, the Dudleys were the Dudleys. Nobody knew who the Dudleys were. You know, the gimmick was kind of a strange gimmick for WWE, and nobody really ever caught on with those guys before that. And then you had the Hardy Boys.
Well, they were huge from, they had a huge ECW.
Oh yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But I'm talking before the WWE audience. Yeah. Like, I knew them from ECW, and I knew they were something. I never saw their stuff, but I knew, I'm like, these guys are something, because I remember the buzz they used to create over in ECW, even though I never saw a match that they did.
Well, that's not that you got me thinking about it. So that was actually, was also interesting with the match. You had a couple, all these run-ins, right? So remember Spike Dudley? Something that happened previous. So Spike Dudley came in and did that springboard bulldog that he would do. He did it off the apron to a table on the floor, and then Lita came down and they triple suplexed somebody with her and the Hardys, and then so everybody had like a little secondary person that made a little run in too. So there was a lot of good spots in that. And then,
yeah, and it was a springboard because Edge and Christian were good, but it wasn't until they had the first kind of matches with the Hardys where they tore down the house, and that's like when you actually like a lot of people say like, oh yeah, they tore down the house with this match and everything. But yeah, they did, but that's kind of like, you know, our podcast is called The Muda Skills. It's based on like how much someone bleeds, but you always compare it to what was in the beginning, and that's that match that the Hardy, you know, I think it was like either a trio of matches that those two guys had. That was the comparing point, and it made stars out of Edge and Christian, made a star out of Edge, and then to a small part made a star out of Jeff Hardy, and we all know how that ended up. But yeah, I mean, anytime that you talk about those guys, it's like, you don't even have to tell me. I already know it's going to be a good match. And then you throw in workers like Chris Jericho and Benoit, who were better workers than all those guys.
Yeah, and I think that's what really made this, because I've seen a lot of, like, you can watch any of those TLC matches, and they're all going to be great matches. But the one that made this one stand out in particular was the addition of Benoit and Jericho, because their psychology is so good, because they have all these different moves that they can pull off. Jericho with his, you know, when he usually does that running bulldog, he bulldogged Bubba off the top of the ladder. He was able to work the ladder match really well, and he was pretty good in it. And then, like, the storytelling also, like, you know, I didn't wrap up the thing, but, like, they carted off Benoit, and then about 15, 20 minutes into the match, he comes limping back down the ring, and then he fights for another 5 or 10 minutes, but he's ultimately the guy that went up and got the belt. And so a really good, like comeback story for him. And the thing that really made it good at the time was, like, those Jericho and Benoit were, like, the two guys that pretty much, like, should have been the foundation of WCW, and then were never allowed to get over. A lot like what we're talking about now. Man, this was a really good run that the two of them had. I'll be curious to see what Jericho would say about, and maybe he's in the book, but maybe if he talked about the tag team championship run that him and Benoit had, because, you know, they had been all over the world and they fought against each other for so long. But for them to be able to be a team and have a good run in the biggest company, I would think that would be something that was really special at Jericho, too.
Yeah, what Jericho was saying about those ladder matches, and this was not the one that you're talking about, but later on, I think he had one with Triple H, but they really kind of wanted to bring, instead of all the high spots, they wanted to bring back elements of what you could do with the ladder instead and do stuff on the ladder instead of, like, diving off the ladder and making that, like, the only spot you could do with the ladder. So he gives a lot of credit and respect to what these guys did, but at the same time, he wanted to bring the psychology back. So, yeah.
He had a spot where there was two side-by-side ladders, and Edge was up at the top of the ladder, and Jericho chased him up, so he punched him in the back a couple of times, and then he pushed him so that he was laying on his stomach across the two ladders, and then Jericho mounted him and put the walls of Jericho on him over the two ladders, which was a pretty unique spot.
Yeah.
So, and that's exactly like what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, the run, did he say anything in his books about...
Not that I remember. You know, it's in the police report, you know? It's in the police report. But, yeah, not that I remember, but, yeah. Those matches, you don't even have to say anything about them. Yeah, I mean, you don't even have to, like, watch them to know, like, these were great matches. And it's just something that I probably have to start doing is kind of going back and looking at these matches. There's a couple matches, I think, for the next couple weeks. I'm gonna give you some homework that you're going to have to sit there and watch, and then we can talk about it in more detail, and we can really start having this segment really kind of take off and kind of devote a little bit more time to. So kind of the greatest hits, so to speak. So we're hitting up on about a minute and 11. Go to Muda Scale, might be Muda Scale / Spreadshirt, or just do a search for Muda Scale and Spreadshirt. You can buy some gear that we created and stuff. We got hoodies and we got T-shirts and stuff, and all proceeds go to me and this guy over here. So
just like Wade Barrett.
Yeah. Can we have some decorum in here?
I got some bad news.
So yeah, go ahead and check that out if you can. Support the show. I'm going to try to do my whole Austin shtick and stuff and everything like that. You know, if you see any chick walking by, or if any chick, if you're walking by with the Moodskill shirt and any chick, you know, walks by her, it wouldn't be a flagpole, but it'd be her clitoris maybe will be at full salute or something like that. So
the little man in the boat.
Yeah, the little man in the boat. Little man. I like that pull right there from our boy Fife Dog over there, dude. So check us out next week. It's pretty good. We went through the whole holiday season. We didn't miss one show, and I think we missed like two or three after that. So check us out. We'll come back next week. Tentatively, I think we should be okay. And then we're trying to get on that road to at least the Royal Rumble. That's one that we are going to watch. I'm actually looking forward to the Royal Rumble. And then we'll see what happens to the road to WrestleMania. Fingers crossed, but we'll be good from there. So gotta have my girls over here on Bad News Ramen. I'll check you out next week. It's guerrilla warfare, 'cause I'm the capital like Cairo. Style of beyond, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000, 2000,